Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
I am a proponent of force. That is an unpopular thing to say. That's the kind of thing that can get you in trouble, so I think it's important to define. What in the world could possibly be meant by force, and how is anybody a proponent of force? What do you mean, how is anybody a proponent of force? Let me go in a different direction. How does anything get done? If you want to go down the path of nonviolence, you can. I'm not here to stop you. I am here to state that in the history of all things, force is what gets things done. But force takes different shapes. The force is not always the fist. The force can be the vote. The force can be persuasion. I'm not talking about Star Wars. The force, if that could work, good Lord. Force was the Federalist Papers. How else to convince the populace of this newly born American nation to adopt the Constitution? It was the constant bombardment of facts, of data, of ideas, of philosophy built into the Constitution to get enough people to be convinced that voting for its ratification was valuable. There's a lot of ways to engage the concept of force. I don't remember if I introduced myself. Tony Katz. That's the name of me, Tony Katz today. That's the name of the show. 833-468-8669. That's how you call in. So when you quote me, radio host says use force, we'll know that you were purposeful in not listening to what I have to say, but at least you got my name right. Katz, K-A-T-Z. Please spell it right. I'm a proponent of force. And what we have seen over the weekend at Columbia University, at Yale, is the use of force. We have seen force used to keep people from walking on campus. We have seen force used to keep people from videotaping what is happening. We have seen force used in the years past to keep people from speaking. These have all been uses of force. We claim that this is free speech. Of course, it is not. If you prevent me from walking down the street, that's not free speech. It is not your free movement to limit my free movement. It is not your free speech to limit my free speech. If I have an area that has been rented out and I am speaking at, for you to come in and try and disrupt and scream and try and steal the microphone, this is not free speech. Not at all. Not in any way. But all of those moves and maneuvers are moves and maneuvers of force. When during the Black Lives Matter grift riots, you were stopping people from driving by pointing guns at them, which happened in my beloved Indianapolis and many other places, that was not free speech. When you block bridges like happened last week, that is not free speech. When you stop people from getting from point A to point B because you have something to say, it's not free speech. When you destroy art, it is not free speech, unless, of course, the art is your own. You can destroy your own art. That could be free speech. Destroying somebody else's art is just a crime. How does one deal with this? I believe one deals with this by force. What do I mean? If at Columbia University, which what's going on there are pogroms, we're talking about the targeting of specific groups. I didn't ask if you liked Jews. I must admit to you, I don't actually give a damn. Like or don't like is completely inconsequential. You may not like Jews, or black people, or gay people, or Christians, or white people. I don't know. And I must admit to you that for the sake of this conversation, while I don't quite understand it, I don't care. The question is, do you favor the targeting of that group, the attacking of that group, the destruction of that group, the silencing of that group, the brutality against that group? Now, it gets me crazy that we're always talking about these groups as opposed to talking about Americans. I think we should be discussing it as Americans, because that's what we're talking about here. But if you favor the idea that some group of people, based on some characteristic, it's okay to attack, well, then you're a scumbag. And I shouldn't say you, because you are fine. They're scumbags. And the people doing this on the campus of Columbia are the same exact people in mentality who marched around Charlottesville claiming Jews will not replace us. That's what they were screaming. Not claiming, screaming. The only difference between the Columbia pogroms and the Charlottesville marchers is the tiki torches. And I do favor sending tiki torches to the Jew haters at Columbia and at Yale and at Northwestern and all across the country. Send them the tiki torches. This is who they are. Tiki torches and khaki pants for everybody. Well, no, you see, that's not right, because those people are Nazis and we're fighting the Nazis. And let me tell you about how those Jews are actually the Nazis. And look at what they're doing in Israel to the poor people of Gaza. They didn't do anything wrong, even though they voted for Hamas and even though they still support Hamas. It's just a genocide, and we have to fight this genocide because we're the people who really believe in justice. And the only way for there to be justice is for those Jews not to have any rights whatsoever. So we have to stop them from walking. We have to take over the campus, and we have to place tents, and we have to hold rallies, and maybe we'll set fire to something. Who knows what kind of violence we'll instill in people, because that's what being a good person is all about. And you're like, ma'am, this is a Wendy's drive-thru. Blah, 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 blah. None of it matters. What matters is force. How does force take shape? Robert Kraft of the New England Patriots puts out a statement. He's the founder of the Foundation to Combat Anti-Semitism. And he writes, "It was through the full academic scholarship Columbia gave me that I was able to attend college and get my start in life. And for that, I've been tremendously grateful. However, the school I love so much, the one that welcomed me and provided me with so much opportunity, is no longer an institution I recognize. I am deeply saddened at the virulent hate that continues to grow on campus and throughout our country. I am no longer confident that Columbia can protect its students and staff, and I am not comfortable with supporting the university until corrective action is taken. It is my hope that Columbia and its leadership will stand up to this hate by ending these protests immediately and will work to earn back the respect and trust of the many of us who have lost faith in the institution. It is my hope that in this difficult time, the Kraft Center at Columbia will serve as a source of security and safety for all Jewish students and faculty on campus who want to gather peacefully to practice their religion, to be together, and to be welcomed." Robert Kraft, money anymore, ever. Money to Yeshiva or a host of other schools. Columbia has to die. You understand that, right? But what he is doing is force. Like Bill Ackman with Harvard, after Claudine Gay was exposed as this plagiarist and this despicable DEI merchant. You didn't agree with DEI, she fired you. You were engaged in plagiarism, you got fired. She did it, well, it was just fine. Claudine Gay gets to go back to being a dean somewhere as opposed to being president of the university and still gets her $900,000 a year salary. This is force. But what else is force? And I want to make sure that I'm very clear about this. It is simply untenable to think that a group of students, or not students, because you never know anymore, thinks that it is okay to stop you from walking down the road, stop you from entering an area, stop you from walking down the street, to stop you because, well, you're Jewish or you look Jewish. Did you see it was in the UK They stopped the guy from walking down the street because there was a protest that took place. And here's a Jewish man. He's crossing the street, and there's this protest with these pro-Palestinian whatevers. And this cop is saying, you can't cross the street. You can't cross the street because you are quite openly Jewish. And, well, you could create a violent situation here. Why would it be violent? Because they, the people who support the bigotry, the people who support the violence, the people who support the terrorists, they are going to be violent.
Once we've been told that when anti...
You are openly Jewish. I'm worried about the reaction to your presence. You're telling me that the people who are pro-Palestinian, which is really pro-Hamas, which is really pro-terrorist, that they absolutely cannot be trusted, that they're a violent sort. That's what you're saying. Force is necessary. Sometimes the force is, as Robert Kraft is doing, financial. Sometimes the force is walking through the crowd and pushing back. I believe that if a crowd of people is trying to keep you from walking, we must create a crowd of people and keep walking. I believe that if a group of people is trying to shout you down, we need a group of people to shout them down. I believe that if a group of people is trying to run after you and engage in acts of violence upon you, that you must utilize force to protect yourself. Which is why I have always stated, and I have now for years, buy guns, buy ammo, and get trained. Tony Katz, he's calling for violence. No. But I do think people act differently if they're not sure whether or not they can get hurt. You see, the tough guys that we're seeing on college campuses are utilizing the social contract against us. And man, that's a violent act. You see, all I do is stop you from walking, but I don't hit you. That's not violent. Well, of course it's violent. And anybody who doesn't see it, violent is a liar. Is a liar and a fraud and worthless, and they can kiss my you-know-what and go to hell. Of course it's violent. You stop somebody from walking, it's violent. There is nothing else. Can we all please grow up? You stop from somebody from speaking, it is violent. Again, with the growing up. And I believe you have to respond to it. Now, the key part of my argument is the idea of responding. You will note, if you've listened to this show for any amount of time, I never said start this way. If somebody's not stopping you from walking down the street, you don't have to respond any which way. You just walk down the street. If nobody's stopping you from speaking freely, well, then you just speak freely. And if somebody else is saying something you disagree with, you have more than a right to disagree with it. You just can't stop them from saying it. Every conversation I have on this subject of force is about a reaction to an attack on you and on these people, whether it be Jews or conservatives or anybody else. The idea that it is unacceptable to respond is the idea that somehow the social contract states that we are not allowed to engage in a response. This is untrue. If there is no response, there will be no opportunity to stop the madness. And to be clear, these people are mad. These people are crazed and dangerous. Thus, one must respond. They block traffic, you push through it. They stop you from walking, you keep walking. And the moment's going to come that at these college campuses, a couple thousand people are going to show up and say, okay, stop me from walking. And the only people to blame are those engaged in the violent act of stopping people from walking. Because I plan on walking. What's so violent about that? Well, we're in your way and you can't push us. No, you're in my way. I have no option but to push you. If you weren't in my way, we wouldn't have a problem. But you admit that you are the problem. You admit that you are the instigator. You admit that you are engaged in the act of violence to stop my mobility. I only have one option. And for the record, you only have one option. Rational people only have one option. Because if we do not engage in force, of whether it's the type of Robert Kraft or the type that I am discussing. Also, force is how we vote. Force is how we do engage in protest. Force is how we do get people to understand our argument, our side, and to join us. If we do not do these things, we lose. And what we lose is society as a whole. That's what we lose. I don't think we should lose society as a whole. I think it's a terrible idea. Lose society to people who carry tiki torches? There's no difference between the Charlottesville people and the Columbia protesters. None. They're all terrible, awful people who shouldn't be in charge and cannot decide for us where we go and what we do. So when I say force, I mean it. And that is how I mean it. And I am happy to defend it at any moment. I'm Tony Katz. Admittedly, I haven't dug super deep into the polling yet. You know me. I never believe just one poll. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today, 833-468-8669. Follow on X at Tony Katz, Instagram at Tony Katz. The polling from NBC News said that twice as many voters who would support Trump in a head-to-head matchup with Biden said they would support Kennedy in a five-way race when compared to Biden supporters in a head-to-head matchup. So they're utilizing this as a way of saying that it is possible that Trump supporters is where Robert Kennedy is getting his support from. And therefore, Robert Kennedy could hurt Trump more in an election than Biden. Off the quick, I don't buy into that in the slightest. I think that seems to be a bit of a desperation in the numbers. I think what would be more rational, and the question I would love to hear, let's say that Trump got convicted, right? In jail, convicted. Are you going to RFK then, or are you sticking with Trump? Never mind the legality and what can Trump run. What are you immediately jumping to RFK, or are you sticking with Trump? That's interesting. That would be an interesting data point. But the idea that in a two-way race there with Trump and in a five-way race here, considering Cornel West in there and Jill Stein in there and Lord only, and then RFK in there, right, from these other disparate parties, that RFK would win the day. But you're not answering how many people even consider Cornel West or Jill Stein in this race. How many of them actually consider it? The vast majority of people see it solely and exclusively as a two-man race. Except for those Democrats who are like, Joe Biden's too old and Joe Biden isn't left enough, which is an amazing thing to think. I'm not so sure this affects Trump at all. I'm Tony Katz. One brisket down, one to go. It's Passover tonight, and my job was to smoke the brisket. So at midnight, they went on. It's so strange when you have ever smoked a brisket before. Tony Katz today, what's going on? 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. There are general rules and principles, but in the end, you do what you want. Now, you know I've written a book on this called Let's Go Barbecue, Let's Go BBQ with Fingers Malloy, my co-host of Eat, Drink, Smoke. It's available at Amazon.com. Go buy 150 copies. Perfect. It's the Mother's Day and Father's Day gift you always needed. Also works for Arbor Day. And so things sometimes don't add up. Because if you believe in the general principle that a brisket takes about an hour to an hour and a half per pound smoked in order to cook, then a 10-pound brisket, for example, would take at least 10 hours and could take 15 hours. Well, I started with an 18-pound brisket. That was one of two. 34 pounds of brisket were in my smoker. And if you take 18 pounds in an hour and a half, that's 18 plus 9. That's a lot of hours. But I'm like, no. Let's do an hour a pound. I know my smoker. It's going to work out 18 hours. According to the internal temperature, way before. Totally freaks me out when that happens. But it happens. It happens for a whole host of reasons. You can utilize all of the skill set you want. And this is the standard this, and this is the standard that. You know your smoking surface, or you know the tool that you're utilizing. You know what the numbers tell you. You know when you feel that it's done, it's done. The key, of course, is the rest. So that first brisket is right now in, it was already butcher paper wrapped at 7 a.m., 8 a.m. this morning? I had 8 hours of smoke before I wrapped it. And now it's in two towels and in the cooler. So that thing's going to keep on cooking. And it's all going to be right. The rest is the key. I cannot say it enough. The rest is the key to a brisket. By the way, the brisket is right, the front legs of the cow, that whole area in front of the legs, that's the brisket. So that muscle gets some work, which is why you got to cook it low and slow, because you got to break it down. That's why. In case you were ever curious, why is the tenderloin the tenderloin? Because that area doesn't actually move. It just gets to be all, you know, delicious. The brisket's doing work. That's why you gotta low and slow it, and you gotta let the, you know, things break down in it, and then you can, you know, get some flavor and get some enjoyment. A little sharing from me to you. So one brisket down, and yet somehow the other brisket is still not there, and it was only a 16-pound brisket. Every brisket is different. Things are, you know, the amount of fat you've got moisture, series of things. Good story, what? Oh, thank you. And don't freak out. Whatever you do, do not freak out. And do not change your temperature. I am not an expert by any stretch of the imagination. Zero expertise. I'm just a fan. Nothing more than a fan. And I like trying. I like trying the things. We write about it in the book, but there is a absolutely incredible bit of television. It was Fox Sports, and it's Alex Rodriguez, formerly of the Yankees, formerly of the Rangers. It is Frank Thomas, Chicago White Sox. It's Pete Rose. And I don't know if this happened off camera or on, but it's recorded. I think it happened on camera. I think it happened spontaneously. And it was a conversation about hitting. You're talking about guys who are hitters. And Pete Rose starts having a conversation. Because remember, Pete Rose has never been involved in a conversation where Pete Rose wasn't the most important person in the conversation. It's part of his charm. But Pete Rose starts having a conversation about hitting. And the conversation is the key to getting out of a slump is, first of all, never admit you're in a slump. Don't ever say you're in a slump. Don't let a pitcher tell you you're in a slump. Don't let a manager tell you you're in a slump. You're never in a slump. But the key is never changing your swing. Don't change your swing. His point is, your swing is what got you into the major leagues. You have to change where you put yourself in relationship to the swing. Step up in the box, in the batter's box, right? So you're in the batter's box. You can, you know, and there's the plate in front of you. Well, if you take a step, if you're a right-hander, you take a step to the left, you're moving up in the box, right? You know, you're moving more towards the pitcher, I should say. Or you can move more away from the pitcher. Or you can move more away from the plate. Or you can crowd the plate. You can move yourself, but don't ever change the swing. The swing is the swing. Everything else can be adjusted for to be able to compensate for whatever issue you might be having. With that, don't ever change your temperature. Ever, ever, ever. Now, there are times where people have changed temperatures. They don't have much time. They forgot to do this. The thing had an issue. And so they do it. But as a rule, you can mess with how much time you spend in the smoker. You can mess with the size of the brisket that you utilize. You can mess with a series of things. Don't mess with the temperature. The temperature is your swing. And I believe that temperature is 225. You got to see it. This thing with Rose and Frank Thomas and Alex Rodriguez, because Rose is talking, and it's clear that Frank Thomas and Alex Rodriguez, guys who are hitters, they can't believe what they're hearing. It was like you could almost see in them, how come no one gave me this advice 20 years ago? This is incredibly thoughtful, well thought out, well articulated. So good. Speaking of well thought out and well articulated, hello, Governor Ron DeSantis.
Well, first on what's happening in these college campuses, you know, if I were in charge, I would send the Justice Department after those universities, because this is unacceptable to have this type of anti-Semitism, where it's not just bad speech. They're really targeting Jewish students. It's a hostile environment and violates the civil rights of those students. And these universities, they just aren't willing to do what needs to be done to ensure. I can tell you this, in Florida, at our state universities, you know, there's a code of conduct. You know, you have a right to protest and stuff, but you don't have a right to harass other people. You don't have a right to put a target on someone's back based on their religion or ethnicity. And if you're doing those things, you know, you're going to be shown the door. I think these students, if they're foreign students on visas, their visas should be canceled and they should be sent home. That should just happen. Second, if it's students, American students, and they're violating code of conduct, you start expelling people, the behavior will change. Right now in higher education, particularly in those schools up there, the inmates run the asylum. And so the students do this stuff knowing there's not going to be any repercussions. The minute there's repercussions, you will start to see a change in behavior. And so I think what's going on up there is disgraceful, but I think Biden has been very weak in basically allowing that to happen without getting the Department of Education and the Department of Justice involved, which I would have done. Now,
utilizing the DOJ, expelling students, sending them back to their country of origin, Governor DeSantis talking about force. By the way, we could have had DeSantis. Oh, I know. Tony, would you get over it? Sure. Yeah. No problem. Just describing what is. I'll give you something else that is. When someone tells you who they are, believe them. That was Maya Angelou. When someone shows you who they are, believe them. Well, this is the out over there in Massachusetts. This was their, I think it's their transportation secretary. And their transportation secretary is very interested in finding ways to raise money. And so much so that she, well, engaged in some real honesty.
We're not censoring this. I'm going to talk about tolling. I'm going to talk about charging TNCs more. I'm going to talk about potentially charging more for package deliveries, charging more for payroll tax, basically going after everybody who has money.
Basically going after everyone who has money can be seen as the Democrats' financial plan for every year they've been in existence since, let's call it 1965. What unbelievable honesty, so brazen. We're going to toll this, we're going to charge for that, you get a package delivered, let's charge you here, targeting everyone who has money. This is ideology, not policy. Now, it's Massachusetts. I don't actually care what happens to the people in Massachusetts. They want this, they get this. If they didn't want this, they wouldn't vote for this. But when you ask yourself, how could people come to this kind of thought? Well, these are the same people who go on these college campuses and demand that they're in charge. They get to college campuses and they demand that you listen to them, these students. They know best. And you have professors who feed that, and then they get into positions of power, and what else do they think? What else could they possibly think? But for the entirety of the Democratic Party, this is exactly how they think. Or they think like Hillary Clinton.
Oh, God!
I know, you might be a little bothered that I'm going to be sharing some Hillary audio.
OMG, are you kidding me right now?
I'm not. I think you need to hear this.
You're a phony!
No, whoa. She may be a phony. I'm not a phony. I just think it's important that you hear what it is that Hillary Clinton had to say. So, let's hear Hillary talk about how dangerous Donald Trump is.
Because Putin does what he would like to do, kill his opposition, imprison his opposition, drive, journalists and others into exile, rule without any check or balance. That's what Trump really wants. And so we have to be very conscious of how he sees the world, because in that world, he only sees strongmen leaders. He sees Putin. He sees Xi. He sees Kim Jong-un in North Korea. Those are the people he is modeling himself after.
Pay no attention. Wait, Tony, you just told us to pay attention. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I want you to know what it is that gets said. But I don't want you to pay attention to the words, because it's pablum. Rather, I think one should pay attention to the fact that the left is so outrageously desperate, they're still interviewing Hillary Clinton. It's like seeing MSNBC interview Stacey Abrams about DEI.
We have to remember that every victory, built into every victory, are the seeds of defeat.
but also built into every defeater the seeds of victory. We have seen victory, but we cannot rest on that victory and think that it is impermeable and impervious to harm. What we know is that the attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, is an attack on democracy, it's an attack on education, it's an attack on how our economy works.
No, getting rid of DEI is smart and valuable because DEI is the attack on all those things. But pay no attention to that. Why is anybody talking to Stacey Abrams? Why is she newsworthy? That's a lot of desperation if all you've got is Hillary and Stacey. This is Tony Katz today. It's going to be a busy week between the trials, between what's going on college campuses, and now University of Michigan is now getting into the into the act. The struggle for the liberation of Palestine is here. Never forget, they're going after your kids. They are going directly after your kids. So the trial of Trump is happening. I must admit, this is the hush money trial. I'm not paying too much attention because I know the whole thing is nonsense. It's nonsense. He didn't break any law. He didn't do anything wrong. So I'm not giving it. I'm aware of it. But I think that's as far as I go with it. Oh, and as for the aid package passed by the House, where they don't support the border, but they'll support Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. I don't know if this cost the speaker. We'll find out tomorrow, everyone. Take care.